This is Digital Story Podcast number 962, August 27th, 2024. Today's theme is Getting Ready for Alaska. I'm Derek Story. In less than 2 weeks, I'm boarding a plane as the first leg of my trip to Alaska. I've never been there, and I want to be prepared for anything that I may encounter. Since I'm smack dab in the middle of my planning, I thought I'd share my thought process with you. All of that and more on this week's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. So let's cut to the chase. Which camera am I taking, right? I've narrowed it down to two different systems, both systems you're familiar with. And, you know, each has its strengths, of course. I don't know if I would say each has its weaknesses, just, you know, one system's better at a couple things than the other, and the other one's better at a couple other things. So, and I'm also thinking about not just this trip to Alaska, which is in a couple weeks, less than a couple weeks, then less than a couple weeks right after that, I'm headed off to Durango, Colorado for our workshop. And I'm thinking about that camera system as well. And it's kind of going like, ooh, I don't think it's going to be the same one for both. So let's get into the components themselves, because that makes things a bit clearer. The first system, well, you may guess, is the OM-1, the Micro Four Thirds system. And that consists of the OM-1 camera body, the OM system 12 to 40 millimeter F28 Pro 2 zoom lens, really great lens, the Olympus 40 to 150 F2.8 Pro zoom, an Olympus 1.4 times teleconverter, the Olympus 17 millimeter F1.8 prime, and the Olympus 75 millimeter F1.8 prime. Now, one of the advantages of this system is that I can slip that 75 millimeter in there, which is a little bigger lens than I normally like to carry in a compact kit for a prime, because everything else is so compact. By the way, I'm putting all of the carry-on stuff in a Tenba shoulder bag, and it's called the, I got it right here. You hear Velcro in the background, the Cooper 13 Slim. And I really like this camera bag for carry-on. It has a luggage strap, so it slides over the handle of my roller. It has quick access through a top zipper, so I can get to the camera really quickly if I need to. It has quick access to the laptop, which is important sometimes when you're going through TSA and stuff. It looks really good. It's a handsome bag. You know, the whole Cooper series is super handsome, and it's compact. It's slim. It's easy to slide under the seat of the plane. It's easier to put over your head in a bus, you know, all that kind of stuff. Really a nice camera bag. Now, this is not the camera bag that I go hiking with. I'll get to that in a few minutes. So let's get into the other system that I'm considering, which is the Nikon ZF, the full frame system. That consists of the Nikon body, the ZF camera body, a Nikon 28 to 400 millimeter Z, and that's an F4 to 8, a Nikon 24 to 50 Z, that's the compact zoom, and that's F4 to 6.3. And then a few primes, the 40 millimeter F2.0 prime, the 26 millimeter F2.8 pancake prime, which makes the camera really easy to carry around and slip into tight spots in your bag and so forth. And then the Viltrox 20 millimeter F2.8 prime. And this is a lens that I've really become fond of, and I like the way 20 millimeters looks on the ZF. It's a nice wide angle for me. I'm comfortable with it, so much different than the 28 millimeter on the zoom, but at the same time, it's not too wide. it's not getting weird, right? So that is the other camera system. So I'm thinking about these. Okay, I love both systems. I love shooting with both systems. So, okay, there's no edge there for either one. So I start thinking about the logistics of the thing. And so we're going to fly up to Vancouver, and we'll be in Vancouver for a night or so, one of my favorite cities, and make sure have some great food because Vancouver is just full of wonderful restaurants. And then going to catch a ship and then sail up to Alaska. Going to do the inner passage. Actually going to do on the outside going up and then the inner passage coming back. So once I get off the plane and get on the ship, lugging things around really isn't going to be an issue, except when I go out on expedition. And I have a couple photo expeditions lined up that will be on land. So, you know, we go into port, catch your expedition, and then off to the hiking you go with your camera gear. So, but, you know, the thing about that is I only need to bring the gear that I think I need for that particular trip. You know, that's what I like to do in general, whether it's here, Durango, anywhere, which is I like to bring a kit that I think covers the bases, still not bringing any more than I need, honestly. Something that covers the bases and then have a really nice carrying solution, as we used to say at Low Pro, for once I'm there. And once I'm there, then I can decide what I need for any particular activity. The backpack that I use, I love this little backpack, and I don't think it's something that everyone is going to love as much as I do. I got a super good deal on it. It was on clearance at B&H, or they did a one-day discount on it. It was one of their specials. But it's the Low Pro Trekker Lite BP backpack, 150 AW. And the nice thing about this backpack is that it folds flat. It folds flat. So I put the backpack actually in the suitcase flat, and I don't have anything in it. It's just in there, the backpack, and it's got really nice access on the bottom. It has this clever system. It's a camera bag within a camera bag sort of thing, but the camera bag is matched to the backpack so that you can slide the side zipper open and get to it, or you can carry it around as a separate camera bag because they even give you a strap with it. So it's like one of those sort of things that I'm such a sucker for. I'm such a sucker for ingenious bag within a bag systems. And this backpack, the Trekker Lite 150, has that. It's all weather, and so it has a cover, and it's weather resistant, which I always think is important when you're going places like Alaska. It also has a nice big pouch for a water bottle, and I think that's super important. And it's a mesh style pouch so that, you know, it can breathe and sweat and do all that sort of stuff, and it doesn't really affect anything else. It's comfortable. It's very comfortable. It's not too big, but it's big enough to carry what I need for a particular trip. And then it's got room for your essentials, you know, while you're out and about, whether it be snacks or, you know, some additional personal items, sunscreen, that kind of stuff. But again, the key to it is that it folds flat in the suitcase. So you bring the backpack separately. I bring the backpack separately, and then I get to have my really nice shoulder bag on the plane. And when I'm bopping around, shoulder bag, of course, has my important camera gear in it, my laptop and my iPad. And then I decide what I want to take when I go out for the day trip. So that's a combination. And this two bag system, whether I'm going on a workshop, whether I'm going on vacation, no matter where I'm going, I'm almost always working with a two-bag system. Now, the bags will vary depending on the trip, and sometimes I need a bigger carry-on bag. I don't like bigger carry-on bags because if it gets difficult to slide under the seat in front of you on a plane right away, for me, that's a problem because, honestly, I have big feet and I have long legs, and I need every inch of floor space I can get. And if the bag is sticking out, protruding, well, then that's taking away from where my feet can go, and then the trip's not going to be as nice. And again, that's the nice thing I like about this Tenba bag is that it always slides under the seat, and then I can even push it off to the side a little bit, and then I got room to put my feet underneath the seat in front of me, which is such a nice thing. Again, tall people will know exactly what I'm talking about here. Folks that aren't as tall, well, you just have it lucky on planes because everything fits, right? Everything fits. So I don't want to take any bigger carry-on bag than I have to for this reason. You know, I want as much room for me as possible. But at the same time, I need to get my gear in. Now, you may wonder, how do I fit a full-frame camera in a slim shoulder bag? Well, that's where that 26mm pancake lens, the Nikon 26mm f2.8 pancake lens, works so well. I love this lens. First of all, it's a good lens. 26mm is a great focal length, right? We're used to it, those of us that shoot with iPhones, because that was the original iPhone wide angle, 26mm. So we're used to 26mm. And then when I put that lens on that camera fits everywhere. It fits everywhere because the lens only comes out as far as the grip. So it's basically flat and it will slide into anything. When that lens is on there, the 26mm f2.8, I don't really notice much of a difference in size between the OM-1 and the Nikon ZF, right? You know, in terms of where they will fit, they'll both fit in about the same places. Where the difference comes in, of course, are with the lenses, the full-frame lenses. Other than the 26mm, the full-frame lenses are just a little bit bigger. But, so that's where I have to deal with it. But when you can slide the camera into a slot, then you can probably slide your lenses into the slots next to it, if you know what I mean, because of diameter of the lenses. The full-frame lenses are longer, but the diameter isn't terrible. Anyway, they all fit in the slim shoulder bag, and that is what I want. So getting back to, okay, which one am I going to go with? Which kit am I going to go with? Well, I want to shoot Northern Lights, and there's supposed to be Northern Lights in September. So I would love, I haven't shot Northern Lights since Iceland. I'm really looking forward, hopefully, to be able to do that. I want to be able to shoot wildlife, both while I'm on the boat, but also while I'm on expedition. So I want to be able to shoot wildlife. So that's another biggie. Of course, I'm going to do landscape or icescape or, you know, whatever I happen to run into. I want to do some street photography. One of my stops is in Juneau, which is a really cool town, an interesting town with a lot of character. And in fact, one of my expeditions is there as well. And I want to do some street photography there because I think it would be fascinating. I think it would be good and something a little different than what I normally shoot. So street photography is on my list as well. So you see, I've got a lot of different things going on there. And I'm leaning towards the ZF for Alaska because of its low light capability and because of the ability I'll have with it to control depth of field. And because with the 26mm on there, I can slide the camera body into basically the same space as I would the OM-1. So I'm leaning toward that for this trip. And then for Durango, I'm really leaning toward the OM-1 because we're going to be doing more hiking. And I want to stick with that same backpack, the Lopro Trekker, but I want to have a few more lenses and stuff with me. And I'm going to probably need more personal items out in Mesa Verde and all that kind of stuff. So I'm leaning toward the OM-1 for Durango and the ZF for Alaska. That's kind of my thinking right now. But it's fun to think about these things and it's fun to plan them out. I have a few tips, by the way, for the planning process. And this is very much like preaching to the choir because photographers tend to be very good at packing. It's one of the things we do because we love our gear, tend to love travel, and those two things lead to we love packing for the travel because in a way it sort of extends the trip, doesn't it? You get to think about the trip and the things that you're going to be doing while you're packing and preparing for it. That being said, though, I want to remind all of us about having some essentials or on the trip, and one of them is if you have a chance of inclement weather, any sort of inclement weather these days, and that could be from heat to rain to snow to hail, all that kind of stuff, wind, make sure that you have items to help you manage your gear in that type of weather. So make sure that you have plenty of microfiber cloths to wipe off the front. Make sure that you have a nice little compact towel or two, like a golfing towel or two, to wipe off gear or to cover gear if you need to. You know, make sure that you have the filters that you may need. Even if you don't shoot with a filter normally, sometimes in inclement weather, you may want to put a filter over the front of the lens, because it's so much easier just to wipe off that filter than it is to try to delicately wipe off the front of the lens when you're in some kind of hailstorm, right? Or something like that. So make sure you have those things. Make sure that whatever you choose for your expedition bag, you have a rain cover for it. Because bags are good, even the water-resistant one, they're good to a certain point. But if you get caught in a downpour, you need that extra layer of protection for your bag. You do not want to be worrying about your gear when you're facing tough weather. And then remember, a lot of times those rain covers can be reversed and they have a lighter side on the inside. And that can be very nice for reflecting heat. And that can also be very nice for protecting you from wind and debris getting in there. So the rain cover is really an all-weather cover, right? Because it can help you in so many different things. And then the last thing is make sure you have room for your personal items so that you don't cheap out on having some food with you. Your 10 essentials, if you're going to be out in the wilderness, water, all that good stuff. Make sure you have a little extra room to carry those things as well. What else here? I'm looking at my list and I'm going to have my laptop. I'm going to have a Soul Guard check-in closet light suitcase. It's a medium-sized suitcase with a flow closet system. Really neat. You pack everything in this squishable closet in the suitcase. And then when you get to your destination, you pull it out, you open it up, and then you hang it in the closet and you don't have to unpack any of that stuff at all. Soul Guard, by the way, is SOLGAARD. I got their carry-on a while back, a few years ago, and I just love it. Love it, love it, love it. It's not big enough for this trip, so I'm taking the medium-sized one for this trip, and it's called the Check-In Closet Light. So anyway, that is my thinking. I'll let you know how it actually turns out if I do indeed go with a Nikon system. And if I do indeed go with those lenses, and then was I prepared correctly to get the shots that I want to get? More to be revealed on this, but this is a fun part of the process, as all of you know who like traveling and taking pictures. Getting ready is half the fun. WD announces SanDisk 8 terabyte memory card. Innovation or overkill? And this is an article on the Foblogger, and I have a link to the article in the show notes. You know, I looked at this article because it said, yes, 8 terabyte, 8 TB. And I go, is this a joke? An SD card that holds 8 terabytes? So I was trying to figure out if this is real or not. Let me read you the article here. There was a time when photographers battled for a little extra space and higher speed on their memory cards. Today, there are many options to choose from depending on your camera and needs, from SD cards to XQD to CFE. Each offers much faster read speeds for entry-level to professional-level cameras. However, have you ever wondered if these cards offer too much storage? Before you come with your pitchforks, let me tell you about a new update from Western Digital. What particularly caught our attention was the new memory card in the SanDisk lineup. As per Sony Alpha rumors, Western Digital Japan recently announced the SanDisk 8TB SDUC UHS-1 card, which is designed for photographers and drones, amongst other uses. At the same time, the company also revealed the concept of a 16TB portable SSD and a 16TB disk drive SSD. While the latter two can be used for multiple purposes, the former one definitely raises some questions. To understand why they designed an 8TB memory card, you have to look at the options available to us. The SD Association, which was founded by Panasonic, SanDisk Corporation, and Toshiba in 2000, offers four types of SD cards. SD, that's up to 2 gigabytes memory. SDHC, between 2 gigabytes and 32 gigabytes memory. SDXC, between 32 gigabytes and 2 terabytes. And SDUC, 2 terabytes to 128 terabytes. The last is certainly a theory, because at the time of writing this article, I could only find the SDXC 1 terabyte memory card. So then he talks a little bit about read and write speeds and all that good stuff. And then I'm going to go down here, one more paragraph, and then I'll talk. For a photographer, 8 terabytes of memory storage seems odd. I doubt the read and write speed will be that high. Plus, imagine having to come back and sort pictures. Sorting 25 gigabytes of memory is a task. 1 terabyte is a nightmare. 8 terabytes will be hellish. Even if one considers that they shoot photos and videos, this kind of memory is a lot. Honestly, we have no idea how SanDisk aims to use it for photography, since our biggest sensors are 36mm by 24mm full-frame ones. A card like this makes more sense for security footage than for photographers. After all, who wants to spend days sorting through every single second they have shot? And then, you know, the other thing is, how much would this thing cost? I mean, if you buy a 1 terabyte card now, it costs about $180 or so, something around there in that neighborhood. So how much is an 8 terabyte SD card going to cost you? And it's a pretty small thing. It's like a postage stamp, right? And so if you spend, I don't know, let's just say for the heck of it. So if you spend $600 on this thing, do you really want a $600 SD card that is so easily left in your pants pocket and then run through the washing machine? I don't know. I don't think I do either. So anyway, they've announced it. We haven't seen one yet. I'll tell you right now, this is not something I have on my wish list. I have a 1 terabyte card in the Nikon ZF, and that is plenty for me. Apple's GlowTime iPhone event will be September 9th. All right, it's that time of year again, boys and girls. This is an article on DP Review, and I have a link to it in the show notes. Apple has announced that it will hold a special event on September 9th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific. The tagline for the event shown on the invitation sent to members of the press is, "It's Glow Time," G-L-O-W time. What does that mean? There's always like a little Easter egg in there, isn't there? In its usual style, Apple hasn't explicitly said it'll announce new iPhones at this event. If history is anything to go by, we'll almost certainly get our first look at the iPhone 16 and the 16 Pro lineup. While there are a number of rumors swirling around about the new iPhone's photographic capabilities, it seems like it may be a relatively quiet year for Apple's camera hardware, as it was for Google's recent Pixel phones. With the iPhone 14 Pro, Apple moved from a conventional Bayer sensor to one that defaults to delivering 12-megapixel images from a 48-megapixel quad Bayer chip. With the iPhone 15 Pro, it added the ability to instead bend those images to 24 megapixels and introduced a 5x telephoto lens on the Max model. So far, it doesn't seem like we'll see anything on that level this year, though there is a chance that the 5x lens will come to the smaller iPhone Pro, replacing the 3x one found on the 15 Pro. The main rumor is that the new crop of phones will include a capture button, which is expected to let you launch the camera app of your choice and then act as an autofocus / shutter button. Currently, you can configure the iPhone 15 Pro's action button to launch the camera and take pictures, but this new hardware is expected to come to all the phones and could let Pro owners use the action button for something else. So it would be in addition to the action button, right? You would have the capture button. going to be a lot of buttons on the side of this phone. But all of this, of course, is speculation. I think thinking about what's going to happen and looking at the recent Google announcement for their phone is that we will see some AI features that are photography related. We certainly know we're going to see AI features for the phone in general, but I think we'll see some for the camera as well. Now, here's the interesting thing. I think Google sort of went crazy. I mean, they didn't really have any big hardware announcement, but their AI for photography is pretty radical, actually, you know, in terms of subject substitution and all that good stuff. I don't anticipate that Apple is going to go as far in AI for photography that Google did, or at least not in the same direction. Maybe we'll have AI that uses something like subject identification or, you know, things like that. But I do think that we will see some AI-related features for our cameras. Now, I'm sitting with an iPhone 15 Pro Max. I like that phone a lot, and I like that camera a lot. So this is nice. It's always nice when you get to sit out what the next iPhone's going to be, you know, and let everyone else, especially if it's not going to be something that you just feel like you have to have. I mean, I have the USB-C connector that I wanted. The iPhone 15 Pro Max will run all the new AI capabilities of the updated software, so I have that. So I'm sort of in the catbird seat, and I'm just going to sit and watch what happens. But I am interested in what does happen, because what happens with the 16 then will be some foreshadowing for the direction that Apple's going to go up the road. All of that will happen. We will learn more on September 9th. And glow time. That one, I can't figure out what the secret is there, but we will find out soon enough. Let's take care of a little virtual camera club business. I'm going to start out with the story from last week, the lead story about zero computational photography with Process Zero. I also wrote about it on the Nimble Photographer newsletter. I was able to give some photo examples of shooting with the iPhone camera, you know, Apple's camera app, and then the Process Zero app. Now, the Process Zero app is by a company that I was not pronouncing correctly. And Chris wrote me after he read the article on Nimble Photographer. And, you know, the company is HALIDE. That's the name of the app. And the way that he says it's pronounced, and I think he is absolutely correct, is Halide. Halide is the app, and I was not saying it that way. So I wanted to make sure that I corrected that so I didn't have other people sending them off into the universe not saying it correctly as well. So it is Halide, and that includes the new feature called Process Zero. By the way, I'm enjoying that app, and I'm using it almost as much as I'm using the camera app, depending on what I'm shooting. So pretty cool stuff. And thank you, Chris, for helping me set the record straight. I want to give a shout out to our Inner Circle members. These are the folks that support our community and our podcast month in and month out. They have their own special place, their own water cooler to hang out at on Derek's Story Online. And they're also eligible for discounts on all of our workshops. And I'm thinking of that because I'm working on the next workshop season right now. I'm thinking, wow, Inner Circle members will get a discount for every one of these workshops I'm going to announce for next year. Isn't that nice? The 2025 workshop season is not that far away. Anyway, if you want to become an Inner Circle member, hang out with all the other cool kids, and receive discounts on the workshops that I announce for next year, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. You can nose around there, sign up. Not long after you sign up, you'll be receiving an invite to our Inner Circle space, and of course, my gratitude for helping support this community. And finally, I want to give a shout out to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. These are the folks that make exceptional printing paper, have a wonderful and informative website, and have some very nice people working for them. We are coming into the last week of our inkjet printing workshop. So printing is so much on the top of my mind. Now, I've had a lot of fun printing a bit more than I usually do during the workshop. So one of the things that I'm going to be doing is getting my reorder ready for some paper, because what happens before we know it? The holidays. And what makes a great gift during the holidays? A fine art greeting card, a print, any number of wonderful items. For people to let them know that you are an artist, you are a good photographer, but you are also a good artist in the sense that you can create something from start to finish, and then that something can be handed to them, mailed to them, wrapped up, and given to them. Don't wait until the last minute to get your supplies for your holiday printing. Start thinking about now, build your list, and then go to Red River Paper. They have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. Order some paper, be all stocked up, make sure you have ink, and then you're ready to go. And a big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'm working on more great things for next week. Until then, stay safe, get out there, take some pictures. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.